This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With the help of everyone in this room, 83 days from now, can you imagine 83 days? We're almost there. We got to get it. We're going to defeat super liberal, more liberal than Bernie Sanders. Did you hear that? The most liberal person in the Senate. Can you believe that? We're going to defeat Kamala Harris. We're going to win back the White House in a historic landslide. And we're going to take back our country. We're going to take it back.
Well, we're pretty sure she's liberal based on all of her past comments. The weird thing is that whenever you hear anything from Kamala Harris, any clips that we're playing or really almost any news outlet is playing, they're all from years ago. Because she doesn't talk to anybody anymore. She's doing a couple rallies here and there, but she's not talking to the media. I am Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry. Annie had planned to be here, but about an hour and a half ago, we found out, wow, she is having a bad, bad migraine. So we are stepping in, and Brad prepared the show just the same as usual. We're going to talk to Hans von Spakovsky here in just a few minutes about some of the Trump stuff. I'm actually going to talk a little bit about Kamala and her insistence that we use paper ballots. Again, though, that's a years old comment because she doesn't say anything now. We're going to talk about that with Hans and all of the election integrity issues and some of the Trump stuff regarding Manhattan and him trying to delay the sentencing. Trump gave a big speech yesterday, though, and it was all about the economy. We are going to talk about that, too, because that seems to be the driver in this election, aside from personality. Now, we did a YouTube live chat poll once that asked the question, what is the biggest issue, or what do you think the biggest determining factor is going to be in this election? And I think one of the choices was immigration, social issues like abortion, transgender, stuff like that, economy, and personality, I believe were the four. And you guys chose overwhelmingly, I was surprised by this, economy. That economy is going to be the number one driver of the election. I think you're right. The problem is that personality gets so much of the attention beyond where it really should. Because the issues are what matters. And Kamala is unfortunately not really addressing any of them. She's not talking about any issues at all because she's not talking. I hesitate to like throw all media under the bus for not calling her out on this, because when you think of media, I mean, and I'm sure a lot of you yell at the radio when we are hammering the media because you're like, you guys are the media. And we're like, well, yes, but we don't have access to the press briefing room.
Well, they generally deny a request for Kamala Harris as well.
And we would love to interview the president. If Donald Trump had friendly territory, it would be here. He is invited anytime. So is Kamala Harris. Yes. So is Joe Biden, whoever. In fact, politicians from all over the spectrum are always invited here. In fact, we're often reaching out to them. We just know that if we're only on in St. Louis, like if we were to syndicate, they might start going, oh, yeah, we'll talk to the entire Midwest or all of Missouri or Illinois. But St. Louis is no longer a battleground area. Illinois, Missouri, you kind of know which way they're going to go. So the politicians, the big ones, they don't put us on their radar. So when I say the media is not asking Kamala the right questions or pressing her to do press conferences, I'm not talking about KMOV. I'm not talking about us here in St. Louis press. I'm sure anybody here would take those interviews. Mm-hmm. The problem is there's only a handful of outlets that have the access, and not just the access to the president or presidents, but the ability to even press those issues. There's only about, let's say, a dozen outlets that could even put the pressure on to do that. So while we live in a very multimedia, more than ever society, which is great to have that many voices and to really democratize the amount of voices out there commenting on these things, it's still the legacy media still has so much control because of their access to these people. And that's by design. They don't want to give everybody access, and the people at the top tend to not to want to either. Donald Trump right now is giving access to anybody, influencers. He's doing podcasts. He's talking to Elon Musk. He's going way outside the boundaries of traditional media, and that is a strategy, and we'll see if it works. Kamala Harris isn't doing anything, nothing. She will not do, and I've been very, very specific about saying this too. It's not just interviews, Brad.
Right.
It's not just that she won't do interviews, because right now she's not.
Right.
It's press conferences.
Yes.
Because you can stage an interview, and mm-hmm. she will.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Those interviews will be edited and chopped together, and they will get the Harris campaign final approval before they can go out.
Yeah. So you can stage an interview. You can stage a few interviews. In fact, most of the friendly media that she's going to do will be very, very complimentary. Mm-hmm. They're not pressing her for a reason. If they get that interview, they're not going to press her in the interview because they want to keep having interviews with her. And they want to be the one that she goes to if she chooses to do them. But I will say, Jim Acosta is saying some stuff right now that I'm like, hey, man, you look almost like a journalist.
Oh,
it's incredible, because when you're in the press briefing room, we've seen the way that you treat Donald Trump versus the way you treat any Democrat. And it's very, very different. But it's in moments like this that I sometimes feel like maybe even the Jim Acostas, the CNNs, are feeling pressure mm-hmm. from like their own journalistic instincts or background that, yeah, it's really not okay that a person has announced a historic presidential candidate, like, boom, out of nowhere, you're the candidate. You would think you'd be everywhere.
Right.
She's nowhere.
Right. We've talked about, like, we've heard the Democrats ad nauseum talking about the threat to democracy and how they have to protect our democracy and how all this stuff is. But really, if you stop and think about it, a presidential candidate that refuses to get out there, refuses to define anything that they stand for, refuses to lay out their policy plans, I don't think she has any policies on her website yet. It's been almost a month now since she's been president, and she's been vice president for years. She's back and forth on whether or not she is part of the Biden-Harris campaign, the administration, all that other stuff. KJP says she is. Harris is like, I don't know, maybe I'm not. Maybe not Bidenomics, maybe Bidenomics. She's all over the place on that, and she's able to do that because nobody's pressing her. But if you have a presidential candidate that refuses to talk to the people who she is saying, I want to serve you by leading, that is a threat to democracy, because you can't make an informed choice as a voter. If Donald Trump were doing the same thing, the left would be losing their minds.
It only is going to be a problem for her when voters decide that it's a problem. And the problem for her is that voters are deciding that it's a problem. Slowly but surely, you got the Dems in your corner. You're not going to lose them, but you need the middle. You need the moderates, and the moderates are starting to ask that question. When you lose Jim Acosta, back to old Jim, when you lose Jim Acosta, then you're starting to lose the narrative and things might change. Jim Acosta had a guy named, I think, Michael Tyler. It just said press or Kamala campaign at the bottom. I think his name was Michael Tyler. He is a spokesperson for the Kamala Harris campaign. Now, he's willing to do media, apparently, but Kamala Harris, the presidential candidate, is not. So Jim Acosta asked him some very pointed questions.
You know, Michael, I'm sure this is not going to be the first time you've heard this question, but the Trump campaign is also going after the vice president for not doing enough interviews, for not holding a press conference. Would it kill you guys to have a press conference? Why hasn't she had a press conference?
Listen, the vice president and Governor Walz have been busy crisscrossing this country since the launch of this campaign and adding Governor Walz to the ticket. You saw the ways in which they went to across the battleground states last week, generating rallies of thousands, 10,000 here, 15,000 there.
This is the job of the media. Good on Jim Acosta for asking a very, very obvious question. Why isn't she doing press conferences? I'm really glad that he said that, too, because it's not just interviews. It's press conferences. Are you willing to stand up and take questions at large from a variety of outlets? Joe Biden did it, and the press played along and did it by note cards. I'm hoping that we're not going to see that from Kamala, because it would be almost too obvious if she did that. But did you hear what the campaign strategist said there? He said, well, you know, why haven't you done a press conference? We've been busy.
Yeah.
It's one of the only things.
Oh, man.
Oh, shoot, we forgot.
Nobody's busy.
We forgot busy to do
doing,
that.
Busy doing everything except for what you should be doing as a presidential candidate.
We're reaching out directly to the voters. Well, you know where the voters are? They watch the news. Mm-hmm. They listen to programs like this. They listen to the radio. They're on podcasts. They're online. They want to hear from you. And so when you start to lose Jim Acosta, you're going to have to change things. Again, kudos to Jim Acosta, because he didn't just allow that to sit. He could have just moved on, said, hey, I asked the question, I get credit for it. But he goes on.
But Michael, you know, a campaign rally is not a press conference.
It's going to be inclusive.
Do you mind if I cut in? I mean, you know, a campaign rally is not a press conference. Why hasn't she had a press conference? She's the vice president. She can handle the questions. Why not do it?
Oh, we absolutely are going to do it. You hear her take questions as she's out on the stump. And
no,
she's, as she said last week, we're going to be having a sit-down interview here before the end of the month. What she's going to be focused on and what this campaign is going to be focused on is communicating directly with the voters that are actually going to decide the pathway to 270 electoral votes. That's why she
and Governor Walz, to a press conference this week?
Country this past week. That's why we're doing a bus tour in Pennsylvania as we head into Chicago. And it's why we'll sit down for an interview before the end of the month.
So it wasn't just that he said it once, twice. He said, look, we got this covered. We're going to sit down for an interview by the end of this month. There's 84 days until the election. They said this on August 14th. That still gives them over 2 weeks to do one interview. One. They're not doing it because she's so bad at it. And everybody knows it. And the more you point it out, the more you're forcing her to step into territory that she's not good in. So it's a great strategy.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the media also knows this. So they're generally not asking her to do it because they know that she's bad at it. Jim Acosta, again, is doing a great job here. And I don't care where it's from. I'm just glad that somebody's doing it, because nobody else is doing this. But Jim Acosta doesn't just stop there. Now, this is the last clip. But he presses this guy again and says, look, you're committing to doing an interview before the end of the month?
I don't want to, you know, belabor this, but one interview before the end of the month. I mean, that's not a lot. I mean, can you commit to a press conference before the end of the month?
We will commit to directly engage with the voters that are actually going to decide this election. And that is going to be complete with rallies, with sit-down interviews, with press conferences, with all the digital assets that we have at our disposal. We are running a campaign that is built to communicate with the voters that are actually going to decide the pathway to 270 electoral votes. We are confident in the plan that we have in place, and we're going to execute on that plan. Yeah.
I believe him there on that last statement.
Yeah,
we are confident with the plan that we have in place. What he's saying there, Ryan, and I don't want to step on what you have, but what he's saying there is we will do everything in our power to communicate to the American people as long as we can control everything about what is going to happen and what is going to be said. We don't want anything outside of our control. We'll use all of our digital assets and we'll go straight to the American people. That means that we're going to record messages, we're going to record ads, and we're going to tell you what we believe, sorta.
Yeah, it's very, very, very controlled, because everybody knows that she's not very good at this. And that's the problem with really good Soviet propaganda, is that you do need somebody who can carry it for you. And the last couple election cycles, they haven't had a great person to do that. If you have bad policies, you need somebody who's really slick at pulling them off. And they haven't had it. So it's weird to see the veil pulled back over the last couple cycles on how the media kind of does this with good candidates when you see them doing it with bad candidates, and how they're able to still kind of use that whole apparatus, but you can see through it a lot worse when the candidate's not very good. Now, that one interview that the campaign strategist was talking about doing there before the end of the month, I don't know if this is what he was referring to, but Kamala Harris did an interview, and it apparently is either dropped right before we went on here, or it's going to drop today. you know, when I say it's going to drop, that means it's highly edited.
Yes, it's already been recorded.
It's recorded, and it's been done, and it's going to be very, very shiny. Kamala Harris sat down for an in-depth interview. She was interviewed by Tim Walz.
Oh, gosh. So not a journalist.
Her vice presidential candidate is the only interview that she's done is with her own VP choice. Now, again, I haven't gotten a chance to see the full thing. Mm-hmm. Fox News, right before we went on, had a chyron that said, Kamala Harris sits down with Walz to talk about tacos and breakfast and phones and stuff.
Oh, so not the campaign.
So it looks like a little bit of a J.B. Pritzker campaign where he knew he was going to win in Illinois, and so he just kind of talked about fun stuff like, who's your favorite Backstreet Boy? And that kind of stuff. That looks like the interview that she's done with her vice president. I did pull the trailer. You want to hear it?
Yes,
I was hoping maybe we wouldn't have to.
I called you, Tim.
Yes.
You didn't answer, Tim.
I know.
What happened?
The most important call of my life. It popped up, and we didn't recognize the caller ID, and it went to voicemail.
Hi, this is Tim. I'm not able to answer.
There you go.
Thank you.
Hey, Tim, it's Kamala. I really want to talk to you.
It is an amazing privilege. I'm excited. I just want to be part of the excitement that you're generating.
Well, we're doing it together, buddy.
It's fine.
We're doing it together.
That's the substance of the campaign right there, Brad.
Man.
It really is. That's what they're running on.
Yeah, it's a mile wide and an inch deep.
It's a feeling. They want you to feel good about this because politics is dirty. It's yucky. It doesn't make people feel good. A lot of people don't like talking about it. But if you can make people feel okay about it, maybe they'll vote for you. Maybe they'll forget everything that you've done in the last 4 years, the policies that you stand for. You can change them a little bit. The media will carry that water for you. But this is the campaign. I mean, we're seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
The campaign is exactly what you said, a mile wide, an inch deep.
And the question to you as the voter is, will you let them get away with not talking to you? Will you let them get away with not telling you what they plan to do with your life for the next 4 years? Ryan, you said it at the beginning. The only way this strategy works is if voters let them get away with it.
Yeah, because the media will have to respond at some point. I'm glad to see that maybe they're starting to ask those questions. Questions about why she won't take questions. I'm Ryan Wiggins, filling in for Annie Fry today, along with Brad Range. It's really the Manny Fry Show because we're just kind of without Annie. It's the rest of us filling in. Hans von Spakovsky joins us every Thursday at 12:25. We're running a little late, so that'll be 12:27-ish today. That's coming up next here on the Annie Fry Show.
Bill that basically would require states to upgrade their elections infrastructure, because guess what? Going like back to the future, best and smartest way to conduct voting, paper ballots. Paper ballots. I joke and I say paper ballots because Russia can't hack a piece of paper.
The best and most secure way to conduct elections, paper ballots. Because the way that I say it, kind of half joking, Russia can't hack a piece of paper.
The most secure way to vote, paper. You're right. And, this is great. Now, it would be great if the Republican leader would put these bills on the floor for a vote.
Well, there's some wise policy decisions. This is Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry, who very, very last minute had to cancel because of some migraine issues. So we're stepping up today. Hans von Spakovsky joins us every Thursday at this time. He's a senior legal fellow at Heritage Foundation. Hans, thanks for being here.
Sure, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So I led with that clip of Kamala Harris on three different instances saying the same thing about supporting paper ballots. That was all before 2020, though. I don't know what changed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In 2020, that she doesn't really have that position anymore, but you wrote the book on it, Our Broken Elections, How the Left Changed the Way You Vote. I wanted to start there, Hans, because we got a big election coming up, and a lot of people are just concerned about the integrity of their vote. How do you feel going into November?
Well, I tell you, I feel better than I did going into 2020 because a number of states improved their election process, passing good reforms. Missouri actually was one of them. But that didn't happen all over the country. You know, places like California, New York are some of the worst states in the country. Michigan, as you know, is a big battleground state. They made things a lot worse by doing things like gutting their voter ID law so that you no longer have to show a real ID to vote there. You could just sign a form saying, yeah, I'm really anti-fry, so you need to let me vote. So really, it depends on what state you're in. Overall, we're probably in better shape, but we're not perfect, and there's still problems in a lot of areas.
Hans, this isn't a problem that just started 4 years ago. I mean, having integrity in elections, as we just played the clip from Kamala Harris, this is something that Democrats have been talking about for years, too. So for whatever reason, they've decided now, though, well, Trump said it, so now I'm against it.
No, that is true, very much so. You know, what's so weird about this is that, look, if you go back to 2005, at that time, there was actually a great report on reforms issued by Jimmy Carter, right? Former Democratic president, and James Baker, former Republican Secretary of State under Reagan. And it had all these great reforms, bipartisan, people agreed on, like requiring an ID to vote. And then since then, it has become such a partisan issue with Democrats totally not only backing away from those kind of good reforms, but actually now being against things like voter ID. By the way, Kamala Harris, you know, she's on numerous occasions said that requiring an ID is discriminatory and suppression. But you probably saw that. In a recent rally she had in Arizona, guess what you needed to get into the rally? A photo ID.
Well, that's discriminatory, though. They don't want some people in there, I guess, in their rallies. Hans, let me ask you this, and it's a little bit in the weeds, but I think it's a question that's worth diving into. When we talk about paper ballots, whether it's Kamala Harris talking about it or it's Donald Trump or anybody else saying, yeah, paper ballots are the way to go. Why is it that's the sticking point? Like, what is it about paper ballots that makes them so much better than any other way of voting?
Well, what folks are worried about is the electronic voting machines that are used in some places. For example, Georgia. In Georgia, if you walk into a polling place, all they have are electronic voting machines that work kind of like ATM screens, the kind you get your money out of the bank. Well, folks are worried about them being hacked, about viruses being put into them. I would agree that using paper ballots is probably the best way to vote, as long as you're not talking about hand counting them. If you're talking about the kind of system that most places now have, of using what's called an OptiScan paper ballot. In other words, yeah, you fill out a paper ballot, but then it's counted by a computer scanner. That's the best way for conducting election, because that way you have an audit trail. Yeah, you got a computer scanning, totaling it up, but if there's any questions about the outcome, yeah, then you can always hand count the ballots. But folks who want to go to completely hand counting, one, that is impractical. Can you imagine trying to do that in a big city like New York or Los Angeles, where you have millions of votes being cast? And second, the more people handling a paper ballot, the greater the chance that someone can engage in fraud. So hand counting, that's not a good idea. paper ballots with a good audit trail, that is a good idea.
I'm glad you made that distinction, because that's actually one of the reasons I asked the question. You kind of hear people going to both extremes, and the answer is in the middle, because you still have to have an election, and you want to count the ballots quickly. If you hand count right. them, it takes a long, long time, and then you're opening up the opportunity for more fraud there too, like you said.
Yep. No, that is unfortunately very true. Now, one thing that people need to remember, and you would think Kamala Harris would know this, but you know that there's actually a federal law in play. Even in places where they want to only have paper ballots, there's a federal law in place passed in 2002 that requires at least one voting machine in every polling place that can be used by people who are disabled, but particularly people who are blind. Blind individuals cannot vote using a paper ballot. They have to have an electronic machine that's got a, you know, an auditory narrator showing you through. So even if we want to make a switch, currently under federal law, at least every polling place in the country is still going to have at least one electronic voting machine.
It's true. And the Freedom to Vote Act would have done a lot more than just that. That was one that I keep a little piece of paper around all the time, because I want to remember what Democrats were trying to do to federal elections in 2021. Hans, I didn't even intend right. to go there with you, but real quick, the Freedom to Vote Act was one or two votes away from getting rid of the filibuster and changing elections the way that we know them forever in 2021. Do you remember some of the specifics of that act?
Yeah, it was an 800-page monstrosity, and it basically would have taken over the running of elections from the states, and it did things like it said no state can have a voter ID law. I mean, it literally banned voter ID laws in all the states, required same-day voter registration, automatic voter registration, and a whole series of other changes that would have, boy, you think we're worried about the security of elections now? If that federal bill had passed, the Democrats are pushing, we would be in much worse shape today.
Well, and it will pass if Kamala Harris wins and they take back the Senate. That will be the way elections go. I hate to say it, but it sounds like fear-mongering, but it's literally based on things they already have drawn up. So it's really not.
That's right.
That's what they're going to do. Hans von Spakovsky on the phone with a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. I'm glad that we talked about that. I did want to talk a little bit about what Trump is trying to get done today. It's been in the news that he is trying to delay the sentencing that he's supposed to receive until after the election in Manhattan. What is his logic for trying to do that? And then will it be successful?
That obviously ought to be done. And the judge ought to grant it to avoid interfering with the election process. But it won't be granted by this judge, because this has got to be one of the most biased judges in the country. He should not have never been on the case. He refused to recuse himself, despite the fact that he has violated judicial ethics rules in New York by actually making a contribution to the Biden campaign. His daughter is in the business of making money as a political consultant for Democrats off of that. He's got to be, like I said, one of those unethical lawyer judges in the country. And his rulings in the case were also always against Trump, always in favor of the prosecution. So Donald Trump, no matter how right he is on this issue, is not going to get a good decision from this judge.
So, Hans, what is going to happen then? What's the date of the sentencing as it is now? And then what are the possible outcomes?
Well, it's in mid-September, and I think this judge, given his unbelievable partisan bias, will sentence Donald Trump to jail, and Trump is going to have to immediately file an appeal asking that be stayed while his appeal is pending.
Oh, gosh, that's amazing. Since we just Isn't have...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, it's astonishing. It's like the state of New York is the U.S. version of Venezuela.
Yeah, I mean, no argument. When you try to put political candidates in jail on things that have never been, I mean, I think I've heard you talking to Annie before and maybe some others right. say this is something that's never been used. It's not as if this is a law and you go, well, you did break it. Maybe we're going a little tough on you because you're our political opponent. This is a law that didn't exist before they made it up to use it against him in this extreme fashion.
No, that is exactly the situation. And it was a biased political prosecutor and a biased political judge that put this in place.
Well, Hans, I am glad to be able to talk to you this week, and I get to listen to you every week here on the Annie Fry Show. I always appreciate your legal insights. Thanks for your time.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Hans von Spakovsky is the Senior Legal Fellow at Heritage Foundation, of course, joins us every Thursday here on the Annie Fry Show. If you're listening right now and you're going, hey, where's Annie? Well, she'll hopefully be back tomorrow. She was just a little sick today. She got a last-minute bad migraine. And so we are the B team. We've been called up. I think we're just going to stand in.
B team for the boys.
Yeah, the boys.
We're the boys.
Yeah, not the B as in like A,
it's,
B.
It's not a letter grade.
No. We're doing a great job. This is Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry. Hey, before we run and we get to, I don't know, what are we calling this next segment? Wiggins America? The whole show is Wiggins America. I do want to mention today's YouTube live chat poll because we were kind of just talking about it with Hans. Will there be any more large surprises before Election Day? You can call that an October surprise, but I didn't want to say October because it could happen at any time. Will there be any more large surprises before Election Day? We've just gone through a season where there were so many that you almost couldn't mm-hmm. keep up with them. And people who don't pay attention to politics were walking into my office here from around Odyssey going, what is happening? Mm-hmm. So everybody's been paying attention to it. Will there be any of those kind of events before Election Day? And I'll ask you this question, yep. Brad. Would putting Donald Trump in jail or saying that he has to go, because he may not
that,
be behind
would
bars.
Would that be a surprise?
Would that be one? I mean, would that rise to that level, do you think?
Yeah, that'd be an election surprise. I don't know that I would be surprised by it. I mean,
but does that qualify as a
oh, for sure.
whoa moment?
For sure, because I mean, that at that moment, it gets real. It becomes real. It's like right now, it's just all talk. We thought, they just wanted to give him the label. But when in reality, they just really want to put him in prison, essentially for challenging their hold on power.
Does that backfire, though?
Maybe. Hey, did you tell them about the new feature?
No, I haven't told them about the new feature. Do you want to do it?
Yeah, I want to do it.
All right.
All right, so we got a new feature on the app, and since Ryan was talking about the poll, I wanted to mention this on the air. We have voice messaging available through the Odyssey app. So if you go and you download the Odyssey app, Audacy, and you go to the 97.1 page, there's a little microphone that pops up whenever you're listening to the stream. If you click that microphone, you can leave us a voice message, and that voice message will go back here to our producer area. We'll cut that voice message, and we will use it in the show if it's apropos. We're not going to use, like, hate mail or just random nonsense or anything like that. So I'll give you guys a task. We've read the poll to you. Call into the or use the app. Leave a voicemail and tell us what you think on the Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll. Will there be any more large surprises before the election day? We want to know what you think. And if you want to venture a guess of what one of those surprises might be, go ahead and leave us a message.
I've got a very interesting Wiggins America. This is some kind of weird stuff that I've been storing up that I decided, you know what? Today is the day. I brought in, I'm just going to hold this up. Maybe not all the way because it's got my address on it. But I got my Ameren bill in the mail. I'm just going to go over it with you. Does that sound like interesting radio? It shouldn't. That sounds like the opposite of interesting radio, which has got to make you think, what's his angle here? Stick around. You'll find out.
We have a lot of important subjects because our country has become a third world nation. We literally are a third world nation. We're a banana republic in so many ways, and we're not going to let that happen because we're starting a free fall. But from today and from the day I take the oath of office, we will rapidly drive prices down and make America affordable again. We're going to make it affordable again.
Make America affordable again. That's why I have my MA hat on. This is Ryan Wiggins, and Brad Range is in here, too. He didn't laugh at that joke, so I kind of feel like real self-conscious right now. But I'm just going to go for it. This is supposed to be the time when Wiggins America airs. But And I kind of brought some stuff a little behind the scenes on when you tune into the live stream, which is up again today, so if you want to watch the show ever, you type in Annie Fry on multiple platforms. YouTube is the one where we always have the poll. Today it's, will there be any more large surprises before Election Day? Yes or no? Let us know. But if you're watching us there and you see us during commercial breaks, you know, sometimes we're just sitting here doing work. Other times we're talking and we're talking about all kinds of stuff. One of the random things that I think is kind of a hobby for at least me and Annie, maybe you too, Brad, we like traveling and we're, I guess, well, I know that I am very frugal. And so flights can be really expensive. So we're always talking about like tips and tricks on how to get more points in Southwest and like all these things that we're always trying to see if we can lower the price of flights when we go out of town, because it's just kind of like a game that we are sharing tips on all the time. I haven't shared this with, I don't think, Annie, but I may have told you, Brad, that I'm going to Denver in mid-September, like with a guy's trip, just a weekend thing. I was going to fly out on Thursday, so I would miss that Thursday, Friday. But I saw that the day before, there was a flight leaving that evening that was so much cheaper that I couldn't resist it. The flight from here to Denver nonstop, $19. A $19 nonstop flight.
Holy cow.
I don't know that I could beat that ever, even with using points and using all the tricks and systems. It was just a super cheap flight. So I booked it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. And like the thrill of the hunt is just as much fun as the actual trip for me. Mm-hmm. So I get this flight and I look at the details of it once I got it. The flight itself cost 7 cents. The other 18 whatever dollars, $18.93 or whatever, was taxes and fees. So so of the $19, 7 cents of it is going to the airline. The rest is just U.S. government taxes and fees. So I bring that up because, A, that's astonishing.
Yeah.
And I literally think you cannot get a cheaper flight than that.
Yeah.
Because you're going to pay the fees regardless.
Yeah.
So that if, unless they lower it from 7 cents to one, I think that's unbeatable.
Well, they beat it by 6 cents. Because if they don't charge you, then there's no taxes on it, right?
I don't know how that works. I can't remember because I think we've booked like some companion pass things before where one of the flights would have been free.
Oh, and who am I kidding?
I think you still do have to pay the
fees,
though.
They can tax you on whatever they want.
Yeah, I don't think you get around it. I think you have to pay all of the TSA stuff. All that stuff is still on every single ticket, as far as I know. The reason I bring that up is because I brought an Ameren bill in that I got, and it, you know, it's expensive. Electric is up. Everything's up, and it's driving me crazy. It's probably driving you crazy, too, how much you got to pay for electricity, and your heating and air is like the biggest part of that. So I was looking for the first time, and never do this because it's so boring, but I was looking at the charges, just like an airline fee, of what comes with this electricity. So some of the money that I'm paying is for the electricity. I'm fine with that. I wish it were lower. I wish we'd drill, baby, drill. I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. But I live in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
You live in Illinois.
Same.
I don't know if Missouri's this bad. I don't. I really don't. But I'm looking at state and local taxes and other mandated charges. I started to read through these, and I was, I guess, a little shocked at how many of them there are. So while energy prices are up, the government is also charging you a lot more than you really need. Let me read for you some of these taxes and fees that are you're paying every month. If you live in Illinois, and I don't know about Missouri, but if you live in Illinois, you are paying these every single month. And because they are based on a percentage, because your bills are so much higher, that percentage is also higher.
Mm-hmm.
So Illinois is making more money on you than they ever have because of things like the clean energy assistance charge, the coal to solar and energy storage charge, renewable energy adjustment, the EDT cost recovery. I don't even know what that is. Electric environmental adjustment, energy efficiency programs charge, energy transition assistance charge, utility-owned solar and sole storage adjustment charge, and then there's some local taxes in there too. You notice a trend with all of those charges? They're all different green energy charges. I don't know what I'm getting out of that. I definitely know what I'm paying for it.
Well, yeah, it's so they can subsidize green energy because it's not as efficient as traditional energy methods, quote-unquote old-fashioned energy methods. But we got to subsidize it because, you know, save the planet and all this other stuff that they say that we need to do because in 12 years, we're done.
Yeah, super happy to see that on my bill that I've been paying all this. And it added up to a total of over $50 of my bill.
It's kind of like whenever you have those, do you have those salespeople that come by your house and be like, hey, Illinois is offering this great deal on solar.
Yes.
And we can put these solar panels on your roof and it won't cost you a dime. Well, part of that is they're making everybody pay for it.
Yeah, you're
on
paying
their bill.
For it. You're already paying for it. Illinois does have huge subsidies. The federal government has huge subsidies for those things. I've always been kind of interested in solar. Now, here's the weird thing. I had a buddy who was, you know, an acquaintance, not like good friend, but I had worked with him on some things before, who did energy efficient homes. And he kind of got into that market in, let's say, 2016, 17, maybe even a little bit before that, when it looked like, man, this is the future. People are going to want to live off the grid. People are going to want to live energy efficient, which I think is super cool. And I think he's a conservative, too. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole, like, living outside of the government thing that is really appealing. The problem is multiple. One, Illinois won't let you get off the grid.
No.
And I don't know, again, another thing, I don't know if Missouri will, maybe a lot of states are like this, but even if your home is fully self-sufficient, you do not need a drop of Illinois oil, whatever that is, or coal.
Power.
If you don't need anything from Illinois, it doesn't matter. You still have to hook up to Illinois because they don't want you off the grid. They want you a part of the system.
Well, they got to pay, they got to charge and pay for those subsidies.
The other thing is that because he was in business doing this, so he wasn't like publicly advertising this all over the place. But if you asked him, he'd tell you, he wasn't going to lie to you. He'd say, look, and he built a really cool big house and he was kind of using his own house as like the model house for his business. So he had solar and he had wind and he had a bunch of other cool stuff that would have made him completely off the grid. He said, solar is almost there. And again, this is almost 10 years ago. Solar is almost there where it could sustain you. But at the time, you couldn't store it for long enough for it to matter.
Yeah.
Well, the batteries have improved to where now that actually is much better than it was 10 years ago. And it will continue to improve. You know who's actually innovated a lot on that? Elon Musk. He made batteries that held way more energy than anybody had ever done. And this was a few years ago. The other thing is, what he told me was wind power is worthless. And he had a windmill in his yard. So he's like, look, that right there is for show. That right there is for subsidies. It's for all the stuff that comes along with having a windmill that people can see. But it does nothing because you just can't make the thing turn fast enough, long enough. It's not about storage with wind. It's that it just doesn't generate enough.
Yeah, it doesn't generate enough.
And so all those big wind-powered fields that you see when you drive from one big city to another in the middle of nowhere that are all government propped up, those things would not be there if it weren't for your tax dollars on your energy bills paying for them, and they do almost nothing. It's not that they don't generate any energy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
From the day I take the oath of office, we will rapidly drive prices down and make America affordable again. We're going to make it affordable again.
Make America affordable again. That's why I have my MAHA hat on. This is Ryan Wiggins, and Brad Range is in here, too. He didn't laugh at that joke, so I kind of feel like real self-conscious right now. But I'm just going to go for it. This is supposed to be the time when Wiggins America airs, but and I kind of brought some stuff, a little behind the scenes on when you tune into the live stream, which is up again today. So if you want to watch the show ever, you type in Annie Fry on multiple platforms. YouTube is the one where we always have the poll today. It's will there be any more large surprises before Election Day? Yes or no? Let us know. But if you're watching us there and you see us during commercial breaks, you know, sometimes we're just sitting here doing work. Other times we're talking and we're talking about all kinds of stuff. One of the random things that I think is kind of a hobby for at least me and Annie, maybe you too, Brad, we like traveling and we're, I know that I am very frugal. And so flights can be really expensive. So we're always talking about like tips and tricks on how to get more points in Southwest and like all these things that we're always trying to see if we can lower the price of flights when we go out of town, because it's just kind of like a game that we are sharing tips on all the time. I haven't shared this with, I don't think Annie, but I may have told you, Brad, that I'm going to Denver in mid-September, like with a guy's trip, just a weekend thing. I was going to fly out on Thursday, so I would miss that Thursday, Friday. But I saw that the day before, there was a flight leaving that evening that was so much cheaper that I couldn't resist it. The flight from here to Denver nonstop, $19. A $19 nonstop flight.
Holy cow.
I don't know that I could beat that ever, even with using points and using all the tricks and systems. It was just a super cheap flight. So I booked it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. And like the thrill of the hunt is just as much fun as the actual trip for me. So I get this flight and I look at the details of it once I got it. The flight itself cost 7 cents. The other 18 whatever dollars, 1893 or whatever, was taxes and fees. So, so of the $19, 7 cents of it is going to the airline. The rest is just U.S. government taxes and fees. So I bring that up because, A, that's astonishing.
Yeah.
And I literally think you cannot get a cheaper flight than that because you're going to pay the fees regardless.
Yeah.
So that if, unless they lower it from 7 cents to one, I think that's unbeatable.
Well, they beat it by 6 cents because if they don't charge you, then there's no taxes on it, right?
I don't know how that works. I can't remember because I think we've booked like some companion pass things before where one of the flights would have been free.
Well, who am I kidding?
I think you still do have to pay the fees,
though.
They
can tax you on whatever they want.
Yeah, I don't think you get around it. I think you have to pay all of the TSA stuff. All that stuff is still on every single ticket, as far as I know. The reason I bring that up is because I brought an Ameren bill in that I got, and it, you know, it's expensive. Electric is up. Everything's up, and it's driving me crazy. It's probably driving you crazy, too, how much you got to pay for electricity, and your heating and air is like the biggest part of that. So I was looking for the first time, and never do this because it's so boring, but I was looking at the charges, just like an airline fee, of what comes with this electricity. So some of the money that I'm paying is for the electricity. I'm fine with that. I wish it were lower. I wish we drill, baby, drill. I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. But I live in Illinois. You live in Illinois.
Same.
I don't know if Missouri's this bad. I don't. I really don't. But I'm looking at state and local taxes and other mandated charges. I started to read through these, and I was, I guess, a little shocked at how many of them there are. So while energy prices are up, the government is also charging you a lot more than you really need. Let me read for you some of these taxes and fees that are you're paying every month. If you live in Illinois, and I don't know about Missouri, but if you live in Illinois, you are paying these every single month. And because they are based on a percentage, because your bills are so much higher, that percentage is also higher. So Illinois is making more money on you than they ever have because of things like the clean energy assistance charge, the coal to solar and energy storage charge, renewable energy adjustment, the EDT cost recovery. I don't even know what that is. Electric environmental adjustment, energy efficiency programs charge, energy transition assistance charge, utility-owned solar and sole storage adjustment charge, and then there's some local taxes in there too. You notice a trend with all of those charges? They're all different green energy charges. I don't know what I'm getting out of that. I definitely know what I'm paying for it.
Well, yeah, it's so they can subsidize green energy because it's not as efficient as traditional energy methods, quote-unquote old-fashioned energy methods. But we got to subsidize it because, you know, save the planet and all this other stuff that they say that we need to do because in 12 years, we're done.
Yeah, super happy to see that on my bill that I've been paying all this. And it added up to a total of over $50 of my bill.
It's kind of like whenever you have those, do you have those salespeople that come by your house and be like, hey, Illinois is offering this great deal on solar.
Yes.
And we can put these solar panels on your roof and it won't cost you a dime. Well, part of that is they're making everybody pay for it.
Yeah, you're
on
paying
their bill.
For it. You're already paying for it. Illinois does have huge subsidies. The federal government has huge subsidies for those things. I've always been kind of interested in solar. Now, here's the weird thing. I had a buddy who was, you know, an acquaintance, not like good friend, but I had worked with him on some things before, who did energy efficient homes. And he kind of got into that market in, let's say, 2016, 17, maybe even a little bit before that, when it looked like, man, this is the future. People are going to want to live off the grid. People are going to want to live energy efficient, which I think is super cool. And I think he's a conservative, too. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole, like, living outside of the government thing that is really appealing. The problem is multiple. One, Illinois won't let you get off the grid.
No.
And I don't know, again, another thing, I don't know if Missouri will. Maybe a lot of states are like this. But even if your home is fully self-sufficient, you do not need a drop of Illinois oil, whatever that is, or coal.
Power.
If you don't need anything from Illinois, it doesn't matter. You still have to hook up to Illinois because they don't want you off the grid. They want you a part of the system.
Well, they got to pay. They got to charge and pay for those subsidies.
The other thing is that because he was in business doing this, so he wasn't like publicly advertising this all over the place. But if you asked him, he'd tell you. He wasn't going to lie to you. He'd say, look, and he built a really cool big house. And he was kind of using his own house as like the model house for his business. So he had solar and he had wind and he had a bunch of other cool stuff that would have made him completely off the grid. He said, solar is almost there. And again, this is almost 10 years ago. Solar is almost there where it could sustain you. But at the time, you couldn't store it for long enough for it to matter.
Yeah.
Well, the batteries have improved so to where now that actually is much better than it was 10 years ago, and it will continue to improve. You know who's actually innovated a lot on that? Elon Musk. He made batteries that held way more energy than anybody had ever done, and this was a few years ago. The other thing is, what he told me was, wind power is worthless. And he had a windmill in his yard. So he's like, look, that right there is for show. That right there is for subsidies. It's for all the stuff that comes along with having a windmill that people can see. But it does nothing because you just can't make the thing turn fast enough, long enough. It's not about storage with wind. It's that it just doesn't generate enough.
Yeah, it doesn't generate enough.
And so all those big wind-powered fields that you see when you drive from one big city to another in the middle of nowhere that are all government-propped up, those things would not be there if it weren't for your tax dollars on your energy bills paying for them, and they do almost nothing. It's not that they don't generate any energy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.